This is a National Museum of Australia recording. For more information, visit nma.gov.au/audio.
Look, I'm really glad that Ian's session was moved before mine, because there's a lot of Western Arnhem Land analogues of what he talked about, and this is, for me, this is the subject matter, of course, that I'm most interested in, is where the expedition meets, it comes face to face with dealing with Aboriginal cosmology. And in Western Arnhem Land, the focus is here on the performance of a secret sacred ceremony, cult ceremony, called variously by a number of names. In Northeast Arnhem Land, it was known as Ngulmark, and in Western Arnhem Land, it's called Wubar, and other names which I'll describe later. But obviously, this is a secret, as I said, a secret sacred ceremony, and I'm not going to talk about the actual content of the film which the expedition made. We're not going to look at, obviously, any photographs from that performance. But I'll be talking about the disparate understandings that the members of the expedition and the Aboriginal people had about these sorts of issues as the white fellows come face to face with the richness of Aboriginal religion and worldview. So, one of the more tangible expressions of Aboriginal religious and philosophical belief, which has attracted the attention of anthropologists, has always been an interest in religious rites and ceremonies. Major regional cult ceremonies in Arnhem Land encompass both public and secret domains of music, dance, ritual and visual arts. They celebrate and restate foundational mythologies that link the present with the origins of the cosmos, and are often spectacular expressions of many of the esoteric aspects of Aboriginal religion and art, as the quote at the very end here by the Kakadu personality and great traditionalist Bill Naichi makes plain. As richly visual events, anthropologists in Arnhem Land have all used still photography to document and record the many religious ceremonies and rites they were witnessing. Until the late 1940s, ethnographic movie film had been used less frequently, although both Baldwin Spencer and Herbert Bassadow had made use of the cine camera during the Arnhem Land expeditions. And indeed, the world's first ethnographic movie film and the first audio recordings made in Australia were those recorded by the Cambridge expedition to the Torres Straits in 1898, led by anthropologist A.C. Haddon. As Susie Russell pointed out in her talk on Tuesday, Charles Mountford's official Australian government tours of the United States involved the presentation of his Central Australian ethnographic films and photographs to large audiences. It was largely through the influence of these films and the impression they left on audiences that support from the National Geographic Society was attracted and the whole idea of the expedition came into being. The 48 expedition recorded performances of Aboriginal ceremony at Groote Eylandt and Goonbalanya. Ceremonial ritual and dance were recorded on movie film and still photography, and the accompanying music and audio in some cases was recorded on Pyrox magnetic wire recorders. At Groote Eylandt, the expedition's first Arnhem Land research location, Mountford arranged for an Arawalcha ceremony to be performed near the expedition camp. The ceremony was recorded on film and described and analysed in a chapter of the first volume of the expedition's published records. The 1948 Owen Pelly ceremony, or Goonbalanya ceremony, recorded by the expedition, is referred to in Goonwingu as Wubar. The Alligator Rivers region languages around Goonbalanya, just drop the W off the front, so you'll see it sometimes written as U-B-A-R, or with, it's actually a tapped sound on the end, Ubar. On Goulburn Island, the Hmong people call it Uar, and the Iwija in the Croker Island and Coburg area call it Guar. And it's one of a number of major regional totemic cult ceremonies. And at the time, I would probably describe it as the most important in Western Arnhem Land. The last performance of the Wubar in Western Arnhem Land, as it's now defunct, is thought to be around 1975 at a place called Woolwoon near Owenbarna or Mount Borrowdale, 30 kilometres to the northwest of Gunbalanya. A considerable amount of documentation of this ceremony was in existence in 1948 when the expedition commissioned their ceremony at Gunbalanya. And obviously, again, I'm not going to talk about the details of that film because as senior custodians of the ceremony in Western Arnhem Land today regard all of this material, which has appeared in publications and in the film, it is all restricted. And yesterday we had the Gundej Nyengmi elder, Jimmy Galadia, who was also on his way in here today. He'll be speaking at the panel later. I have to describe it, when he was shown the material in Simpson's book, he was quite disturbed. So it's not in the public domain, so we won't be concentrating on any of that particular content. Mountford was in 1948 no doubt aware of Spencer's 1912 documentation, and when the ABC radio journalist Colin Simpson joined the expedition at Gunbalanya, the two men developed a plan to commission an Aboriginal corroboree, quote-unquote, as Simpson outlines in his book Adam and Oka. And so you can see there, this just a quote from the book, where he describes how the National Geographic magazine had exclusive rights to cover the expedition. However, it was considered that radio somehow might be able to get around that because it wasn't involving visual images. And so he could go in and do a feature on the expedition and gather whatever seemed to be interesting to describe and record and sound. And I like the last sentence's motivation is that the BBC had often asked the ABC for material and they felt red-faced that they didn't have anything, so here was the big chance to get something. Simpson goes on to describe how he discussed local ceremonial traditions with Mountford, and in particular the possibility of recording the sacred sounds of secret objects used in the Wubar, which were quite fascinating to anthropologists at the time. Mountford tells Simpson, quote, "It would be really something if you could get that corroboree on your wire recorder and at the same time we could get it on ours." Important regional, unquote. These major regional ceremonies in Western Arnhem Land often involve many weeks of preparation, and they last for weeks as well, and they still do today. There are complicated payments between different social categories to make them happen, and that can involve food, trade goods, most importantly tobacco, and initiated youths are sent out in all of these ceremonies as messengers to invite distant groups to the ceremony weeks before the final rites. And this is Spencer's image of that event actually happening. That's in the public domain, that image. There's a camp of women in the distance. This is not far from Gunbalanya in 1912. The youths go out, they sing certain public songs which invite distant camps into the performance of the ceremony. Simpson records that the 1948 Gunbalanya ceremony was organised by, quote, "some old men of the Gunwingu tribe," unquote, over a few days, and he and Mountford conceived of the idea and put their request to these elders. The ceremony was also paid for by Mountford with food and tobacco, and this is in keeping with the expedition practice of paying Aboriginal people for services rendered, as well as the local cultural practice relating to the commissioning of religious ceremonies. So they got that one quite well done on all fronts. The Wubar ceremony rituals take place over a number of weeks. In August of 1947, Ronald Byrne also saw and documented a Wubar at Gunbalanya over a period of 6 days. But the Burns note that the version of the rituals they saw, quote, "normally extend over a much longer period than those 6 days." The Wubar ceremony commissioned by Mountford at Gunbalanya was reduced to a single day, Saturday the 23rd October 1948. However, there were preparations which were filmed. So the filming of the event happened over a number of days. The actual performance happened on that Saturday. And so it was greatly modified for the convenience of the non-Aboriginal audience. And I suspect that the following day, being a Sunday, had and the requirement that many of the people working for the expedition were expected to be at church on the Sunday, and so it could only occur on the Saturday. Many of the Wubba rituals take place at night, but on the last day of the ceremony, the concluding rituals in the public camp with the women occur in the morning. To make it possible to photograph the ceremony, the 1948 performance was condensed. It commenced in the morning and concluded in the afternoon after the expedition team had retired for a lunch break. As well as food and tobacco, Mountford even supplied the paint for the body painting that the ceremonial participants used, which you'll see Frank Setzler records some of the details. And I've just cut and pasted bits and pieces out of that diary there because much of the material he does refer to is not in the public domain. You'll see there he refers to Owen Pelly Hill. It's known by Aboriginal people today as Aragaluk, a hill on the southern side of the township, and a traditional Wubba ceremony ground. Wubba ceremonies are usually performed at the base of or on top of elevated landscapes. The long-standing tradition is reflected even today, if not geographically, then linguistically, in the major regional ceremonies which have replaced the now defunct Wubba, such as the Gunabibi and the Yapudurua. To enter the restricted men's ceremonial ground from outside today, one says figuratively in Biningunwak dialects, Ngabitbun, and that means I'm going up. And that's regardless of whether the speaker will ascend, descend, or walk across to a flat area to get to the ceremonial ground. Because in the past, the Wubba was always performed at the base of hills. Setzler's interpretation of dances being performed to, quote, satisfy the spirits, unquote, is totally inconsistent with Aboriginal religion in general, let alone what we now know about the Wubba ceremony from other documentation. Such interpretations have more in common, perhaps, with the trope of Hollywood voodoo than they do with the ethnographic realities of the Wubba ceremony. Indeed, as historian Martin Thomas has already pointed out in some of his published works on the expedition, Mountford's filming direction had its own special touch of Hollywood in the way he staged certain aspects of these ceremonies. Projecting an image of Arnhem Land people in keeping with Mountford's desire to capture untainted traditions required a certain amount of stage management from time to time in the costume department. At Groote Eylandt, the Aboriginal performers wore too little or no clothing during ceremonial performances. And I was just discussing this with Ray, who said that, well, there was less of a mission influence at Groote Eylandt at the time, and so maybe that could explain that. So Mountford arranged for the performers to wear cotton loincloths, which he had prepared, and dyed in ink, thus creating the illusion of nakedness while still satisfying the sensitivities of his intended audiences. At the Owen Pally Wubba performance, it was the opposite problem, and offending trousers had to come off in favour of loincloths. Frederick McCarthy records in his diary entry for the day of the ceremony, in the beginning of the ceremony, one man appeared in a pair of long pants and Monty made him change into a Naga loincloth. He yelled out, "Take them off, I'm paying for this." The ceremonial performers, together with a group of expedition photographers and onlookers, must have been quite a spectacle. Colin Simpson, replete with pith helmet and microphone, can be seen in some of the film footage as he darts in and around the Aboriginal performers, making his audio recordings. The competition amongst the expedition team members, all positioning themselves to get unimpeded photographic angles of the ceremony, is revealed in McCarthy's diary descriptions of the melee. And it's a bit hard to read there, so I'll read it out for you. It says, on the 23rd of October is the entry, an Wubba ceremony, C-typed account, was held at Owen Pally Hill, where the natives had a dancing ground on the western side. Two young men were initiated. Colin Simpson made a wire recording, and he bolted into the middle of the dances all the time, so spoiling the spectacle for the photographers. Actually, he spoilt a very beautiful and impressive performance for them. At another stage, I was photographing when Bassett Smith put his movie camera on a lower rock and spoilt my view. Within a few minutes, he fell off with his camera and I said to Harney, "Thank God he's gone." Forgetting that he might have injured himself and damaged his camera. Fortunately, he didn't. Likewise, expedition botanist Ray Speck, present with us here today, recorded the following entry in his diary, which he has kindly shared with us here today. Simpson and Ray Giles have been out here doing an actuality broadcast for the ABC. Over the weekend, they recorded some corroborees. You've never seen anything like it. Three movie cameras, Monty, Howell and Peter. Two still cameras, Frank and Fred and the ABC. However, in spite of this confusion, they all got some good material and appear quite happy with the results. I abandoned collecting plants on Saturday for shame. What were you thinking, Ray? Goodness. And watched. It was a very interesting ceremony. The recording of the 1948 Woobah was a hybrid social science and journalistic endeavour, which today raises the obvious issue of the cross-purposes of journalists and Aboriginal custodians of secret, sacred ceremonial knowledge. With the increasing visual and audio documentation of Aboriginal cultures, especially from the 1940s onwards, ethical issues relating to the publication of secret, sacred Aboriginal cultural and intellectual property developed momentum throughout Australia. In 1977, Mountford himself was involved in a controversy with the publication of his book, Nomads of the Australian Desert, which contained photographs of secret sacred subjects and other information that was given to him by Pitjantjatjara men on the condition that it remain confidential. The book was eventually withdrawn from sale in the Northern Territory after a court injunction. The expedition team in Gunbalanya were aware of the secrecy of the Woobah ceremony and that what they were recording was not in the public domain. Simpson, in Adam and Ochre, dedicates a chapter to the performance of the 1948 Woobah, including colour plates of secret rituals and objects used in the ceremony, their manufacture, secret names and use. He acknowledges that these are things that women and uninitiated people must never hear mentioned, let alone see. The book sold over 50,000 copies. The secrets of the Woobah ceremony were secrets no more. In addition to the publication of Simpson's book, Woobah film footage was also later shown by Setzler in public lectures he conducted across the United States. Simpson's main objective had been to produce an ABC radio documentary about the ceremony for the series, which we heard about yesterday, Australian Walkabout. He produced a script and edited the audio for this production, but it was never broadcast on the advice of the influential Sydney anthropologist A.P. Elkin. The issue was not so much that the public revelation of the secret Woobah ceremonial material would distress the Aboriginal community, but rather that such distress might put at risk further anthropological research in Arnhem Land. And I've had to just actually Photoshop out a few words in there because they're not in the public domain after checking with people like Jimmy down here. So there was another word here, but we've changed that to Ubar. So Elkin was concerned about this, perhaps not so much because of the issues discussed there, but as we have discussed this week, because of perhaps political matters relating to who was actually invited and not invited to participate on the expedition, possibly. In the unfolding post-colonial decades after the expedition, whilst anthropologists and journalists were slowly gaining awareness or not of the ethical implications of publishing culturally sensitive documentation, Aboriginal people too were gradually realising that books, photographs and films of their secret sacred ceremonies had been circulated by anthropologists and journalists in the public domain, risking exposure of these private and ritually dangerous images to their women and children. As Simpson's comments demonstrate, even these kinds of Aboriginal concerns were used as ammunition in the political rivalries amongst anthropologists and journalists working in Arnhem Land around the time of the expedition and later. As we know, Mountford had rivals and political opponents and also disagreements not only from people within the expedition team members but also with other anthropologists of the day, including Elkin and Ronald Burnt, as other sessions have discussed. But possibly because, amongst other reasons, these two experts on Arnhem Land Aboriginal cultures had somehow missed out on being consulted or involved in the expedition. Elkin took a number of opportunities to criticise and belittle the findings of the expedition. Likewise, Mountford took delight in attacking Elkin and the Burnts in the official records of the expedition, casting aspersions on Ronald Burnt's well-known work on sexuality and Aboriginal culture. And so here he talks about what the Burnts had written about this incredible wealth of X-ray paintings in the Gunbalanya area, which I suppose at the time it was surprisingly little, although I imagine the Burns would say, well, we were actually interested in other subjects. But anyway, there it goes. The start of the battle commences with the publication of those with the official records of the expedition. In return, Burnt, as we heard from Ian McIntosh today, Burnt, writing in 1962, sees the 1948 expedition. I don't know whether he sees it or he is just giving voice to Burumara's views about the expedition as being instrumental in the collapse of traditional religious life at Elko Island. He quotes one of the leaders, David Burumara, who criticised the publication of photographs and films, secret ceremonies and sacred ritual objects by the Arnhem Land expedition. So as you can see from reading that, expedition film footage was shown to the Aboriginal community some years later at Elko, and it caused enormous distress and triggered off, according to what Burnt writes here, this adjustment movement. There was an analogue in Western Arnhem Land of all of this as well. I should mention that I don't actually know the year, but I think it's Anthony Murphy, the art advisor at Inyalak, who I believe was there at the club at Owen Pally when I think we'll just describe it as a cultural representatives from a cultural institution in Australia turned up with copies of the 1948 expedition film of the Wubba ceremony. Without consulting anybody, they went into or arranged to show this footage in the pub, and the video goes in. The lights are dimmed. The people are assembled, and in the first 10 seconds, the senior traditional owner of the community, Donald Gumadul, realizes what the subject matter was, and gets up in front of everyone, goes to the eject button, takes the cassette out and walks out the door and is never seen again. That was the end of the performance. And the aftermath of that made it actually initially quite a sensitive matter when Martin and I went back to Gunbalanya to return this film footage in a more proper way. And this is when we found out this story. We were told, well, look, just be a bit careful because this is what happened the first time it came back. So whilst limited by their cultural sensitivity, other historical recordings of certain defunct ceremonial traditions, however, and nonetheless, will also become increasingly important to Aboriginal communities in the future, as Martin and I learnt when we returned material to Gunbalanya a couple of years ago. Such recordings were originally allowed because of an assumption that across the cultural divide, there was value and pride in sharing these ceremonial events with outsiders. And I think this continues on from Ian's discussion about, well, what actually took place here? What was going on when people decided we will share this material of great significance and value to us with these outsiders? We don't have records of what those deliberations were on the behalf of the Aboriginal owners of the ceremony. But in return, the expectation has always been that the privacy of that material recorded should be respected. Projects which are recording and archiving the music, ceremony and linguistic traditions of Western Arnhem Land today, they continue exactly because of the same motivations shared by the 1948 Wubba performers, a desire to maintain certain cultural practices, to teach others about them and to preserve them when they're endangered. The 1948 ceremony, however, was clouded by the cross purposes of the groups involved. The expedition team recorded the Wubba ceremony in the context of scientific research, but also journalistic endeavour. And as we did discuss yesterday in relation to human skeletal remains, there's probably not much point in according blame to people who got it wrong 60 years ago when values and understandings are not as they are today. However, we need to focus on what we do know about what should be respected today and what should be tolerated and not tolerated across the cultural divide. We have no record of what those senior Aboriginal organisers of the ceremony thought about the idea of performing a sacred cult ritual for a group of foreigners on a brief visit. Whatever their deliberations, they did decide to do it, and the residents of Gunbalanya usually had to deal with the disapproving attitudes of their missionary overseers in relation to ceremonial matters. And so in the eyes of the Gunwingu, I would suggest that the request must have clearly distinguished the expedition team from the mission. Although the Wubar is now defunct, other large regional religious ceremonies are still practiced today. These may continue for many weeks and they attract hundreds of participants. A major ceremony at Gunbalanya in 2008 involved the induction of over 100 youths from all parts of Western Arnhem Land, and the senior ceremonial organiser and leader of that Gunapipi was Mr. Jimmy Galadia here, he oversaw the reintroduction of that ceremony and arranged for over 100 youth to be reinducted into it. Rites such as these see the kind of commitment to, I think, what you could call the corporate good that so many communities are criticised for lacking in other forms of governance. Such celebrations of high Aboriginal culture make a vital contribution to the psychological health of communities with very complex questions and problems. In addition, these are magnificent ceremonies which are rare and fragile cultural treasures, which are part of all of Australia's heritage. And I'll just finish with the words of the Gunbalanya elder Jacob Nyingel, who, when the 1948 film of this ceremony was returned to him and he viewed it in Gunbalanya, he said to Martin and myself, he said, look, thank you so much for coming back and returning this and doing it, getting it right this time. He said, without films like this, we are not able to remember. And I think that was that was a really fabulous end to the process of repatriating the film. Thank you very much.
The National Museum of Australia in Canberra explores what it means to be Australian through our permanent galleries, exhibitions, public programs, and the National Historical Collection. Find out more about the museum at nma.gov.au or download more audio programs from nma.gov.au/audio.